Nick, put down that brownie. It's podcast time.
Oh, sorry.
I'm done.
I thought we were allowed to eat during podcasts.
Is that the new rules? All right, let's do this.
It is the eating crunchy, terrible noises podcast.
This is episode 69 of the Big Planet Comics podcast. Yep. My name is Kevin.
I'm Nick.
My name is Jared.
I was listening to a podcast the other day.
Was it ours?
It was not. I don't ever listen to our podcast. No. But there was definitely somebody like sucking on a lozenge while they were doing the podcast, and it was grossing me out. They were like,
you hope that's what they were doing. Maybe they're eating a brownie.
It was gross. Yeah, but so this is the first of maybe like two kind of mini episodes.
Yeah.
A lot of comics came out this week, but not a lot of new comics.
Yeah, so
and it's the holidays. Give us a break.
It is the holidays. Give us a break. You guys, what are you guys doing for the holidays?
Nothing. I don't believe celebrating. In the holidays.
Celebrating.
Staying at my house and people times. Are coming over.
Oh, that's good.
That's what's happening to me. My mom's coming into town.
Nice.
Yeah.
I like your mom.
Cool. Let's do some news.
All right. This just in, hot off the presses. Hugh Jackman to appear in X-Men First Class 2 or whatever it's called.
X-Men First Class 2 Days of Future Past?
Wow, what? That would be a mouthful.
Is that what they're calling it?
I think that's what. Or it's,
is that the story?
It might be X-Men Days of Future Past.
What?
It is definitely Days of Future Past.
How did I never... Oh, that's so exciting.
Oh, this just in. The new X-Men movie is Days of Future Past.
What?
so he's joining the cast along with Patrick Stewart and Ian McKellen reprising their roles. Or maybe they're playing new characters.
That'd be amazing.
They are. Hugh Jackman
is pulling a Johnny Storm.
Yeah, is playing Kitty Pryde.
Yeah, and Ian McKellen is playing Future Forge.
Gandalf the Grey. He's playing Ahab.
Oh, God. Patrick Stewart's playing Bishop.
Yeah, from the Days of Future Future.
Oh,
jeez. Yeah, so that's kind of news, yeah, right?
Like, news to me. Sure.
Was Wolverine in the last one? Did he have, like, a cameo or something?
He had a cameo.
Yeah, I remember he had that one, like...
The one liner that made people chuckle.
Go bleep yourself.
Chuckle.
My foot is stuck on this wire. Hey, how's it going?
You're ruining punchlines over here.
In breaking news, my foot is stuck on this wire. cool.
What else we got?
Jim Carrey.
What about him?
He's in Kick-Ass.
He loves Emma Stone.
He's in Kick-Ass.
He is in Kick-Ass. We already talked about that.
I saw some pictures of him.
Breaking news. Jim Carrey loves Emma Stone. What else is going on?
I don't know. Nothing else.
No, we just looked it all up.
So another piece of news.
Yes,
James Kolchaka.
Uh-huh.
And his American Elf webcomic.
His daily webcomic strip.
Is ending.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, it's been running for a long time.
It's like 10 years or something?
Yeah, since I think 2000.
Yeah, one of the first webcomics before when the internet was invented.
Yeah, and it's been a daily, pretty much daily, I think.
Yeah.
Just webcomics sort of about his life and watching his kids grow up on the computer screen and in collected books from Top Shelf, $19.99 MSRP. It's ending December 31st.
Yeah, he just said he was just kind of ending it because it's time or whatever.
Yeah.
But he's really because he's hit the big time.
He has hit the
big
time. He's
a big shot now.
What's he doing?
Well, he's doing Super Effers.
Yeah, he's doing there's a cartoon of that.
Oh, I didn't know that.
On,
I thought you were being sarcastic.
Like, Adult Swim, right?
No, it's on Cartoon Hangover. It's a YouTube channel. The same people that do Bravest Warriors.
Oh.
That's awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
Good for them.
Yeah,
that's
definitely. Yeah. Yeah, so if you haven't ever read that comic, definitely check it out. It's pretty good.
Yeah, it's really funny.
It's making Nick cry.
Yeah, I'm crying over here.
Oh, by the way, you can check us out on Facebook. I was probably supposed to do that before. We're on Twitter and subscribe on iTunes.
Yeah,
and Tumble.
And in other news.
That's how we roll here.
Are we talking about the Extermination crossover?
Ramshackle.
Because I don't even know what it is. Or Age of Ultron.
Age of Ultron, starting soon. 10-issue miniseries. Pitting Marvel's greatest heroes against the Age of Ultron. Age of Ultron. One of the wacky things from that is Marvel is kind of using their framework for like point ones. So like instead of having issues that cross over in titles, it'll be like Fantastic Four number 7 AU instead of 8 or whatever.
Oh, for Age of Ultron. I get it now. I thought it meant like gold.
Womp up the jams.
Like, I guess it kind of pleases two different people. One is like
Ultron.
One is like you know, because
Joke
like retailers want people to buy that issue, and if it's part of the series, they'll buy it. But also for fans, if they don't want to buy it, it's not actually one of the issues of the series technically, because it'll be like, because you can get 6 and 7 and 8, but you don't have to get 6 AU.
So it's good for everybody, but and also bad for everybody.
Yeah.
True. I'm gonna go with bad for everybody.
But you know,
no,
it'll
bad
be
for everybody.
It'll be pretty cool.
We'll see. We'll see how the issues are. I'm sure they'll be
mostly right. Drawn by Brian Hitch. I think the first 5 issues.
He's good.
He's already done them like a year ago or something. Like
so I guess it's not. Is it his fault that America's Got Powers is so late all the time, or you think
probably.
That's Jonathan Ross's fault?
No, it's probably his fault.
Yeah,
and. Both. Also, it's a 10-issue weekly series. I should have mentioned
that. There we go. That's always fun for us as retailers. Just like,
how many do you order?
Yeah, how many do you order?
Yeah.
Don't know.
A lot.
Because we'll order all 10 issues before the first issue comes out, basically.
A lot.
Yeah. And we had some other piece of news. What was it?
I forgot. It seemed to be overshadowed by Age of Ultron.
Shelley Bond is going to be running Vertigo now. She's been working there for a long time, true. So that's cool.
Huh.
What else?
We have one more piece of news.
Oh, there was something.
Oh, Captain K-Rot.
Oh, gross. So, if anybody doesn't remember, Captain Carrot,
I was thinking of Flaming Carrot.
He was a DC character that was kind of in.
It was like Captain Carrot and the
Zoo Crew. He was like the Peter Porker of the.
Did they have their own
DC
comic
universe?
Or were they in like backups and stuff?
I think they had it.
He had his own comic.
Okay, they had their own comic. But
Jesus, Nick.
So. DC decided, hey, let's bring Captain Carrot into the DC universe, and they didn't.
He was always in the DC universe.
Instead of
the one I read had Beast Boy traveling over to their universe.
They were one of the other Earths or whatever. Yeah. But instead, in this one, there, Captain Carrot is on in outer space, and his name is now Captain K'Rot.
Is he from Krypton?
No.
And is he like a kryptonite?
He's
pet?
A badass rabbit with attitude. He's got like guns and like I think an eye patch maybe.
And pouches?
Yeah, probably.
Probably some pouches. Ugh.
Oh, if Liefeld came in and revamped
and he's
going to
be in Threshold. I don't know if I mentioned that.
Yeah, and Threshold, I think, I don't know if we ever mentioned Threshold.
We should do a little more of talking about
new issues that are announced.
Yeah, we could do that.
We could.
We've tried that with a preview, and it drove us
we'll
insane.
Read them all.
Well, I think when the show first started, we actually like went through an entire preview.
You guys did. It wasn't me. I avoided that.
Yeah, that was Nick and I. We were pretty drunk by the end of that podcast.
You have to be.
So Captain Carrot.
K-Rot.
It's so
I keep calling him K-Rot, but it's Carrot. That's how it's probably pronounced.
No, it's K-Rot.
I don't like this whole gritifying of everything. It's not a new thing, you know. It happened a ton in like the late 80s. Yeah. But I thought we were getting away from that.
Yeah. There's also just things that it's utterly inappropriate for. And Captain Carrot, who is a large, overly muscled
Captain K-Rot,
parody of superheroes.
Yeah. I don't get that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty stupid.
Yeah. It's not that great. Well, so that's it for news.
Edge.
Yeah, indeed. I think I've got a little bit of viewer mail. I got to find it on my phone. I'm going to see if I can do that by the time this theme song is over. All right. It looks like first we got a little feedback from somebody who whose book we reviewed.
Yep. Jess Smart Smiley tweeted back at us when we reviewed his Upside Down of Vampire Tale and said that he was thanking us for the thoughtful review and said we described his book much better than he would have been able to. And he thought it was really cool that we tucked such an offbeat story in with the heavyweights, because that was a very Marvel review.
It was, yeah. Right. Yeah. Well, thanks, Jess. Hopefully all your books are good and we'll say good stuff about them forever.
Yeah.
No, that book was awesome. And it's the first in a series, so
yeah,
exciting.
Waiting for more Upside Down Vampire.
And he liked our review of Sherlock Holmes, so he's going to go check it out.
Oh, cool.
I was like, sweet.
All right, so we got a couple other questions. So this first one's a little strange. So this is from a guy named Wang Gretzky.
I don't think that's his real name.
I hope it is.
I was going to say his email is, but I guess I shouldn't read his email on the air. He says, hey, podcast. That's us. He says, first time caller, long time listener. I noticed that you guys don't give Bob Burden a lot of props on your podcast.
I just talked about Flaming Carrot 2 seconds ago.
Why do you think there is so much malice in the mainstream and indie community towards free thinkers like Bob Burden? Thanks again, Wang Gretzky.
Is his email bobburden@flamingcarrot.com?
I want to say his email, but I won't.
All right. we'll put it up on our website.
It's not bobburden@ is bobburden.com.
Is it flamingcarrot@bobburden.com?
It's not. So
is it krot@bobburden.com?
I guess we'll just answer this. I'm going to answer this honestly, because Bob Burton doesn't put out any comics.
Not in a long time.
Yeah.
When's the last time you read a Bob Burton comic?
I remember he put out, were they called Type A comics? That was like the last thing I remember from him.
I don't know what those are.
It was like he was putting out those prose comics. They were just like comics with short stories about the mystery men in them. So not comics at all, just comic format. Yeah, but I will say when I was much younger, I was a huge fan of Flaming Carrot when it was still coming out. It was one of my favorite comics.
Pretty awesome. I remember
when I was 16, I saw Bob Burton at Dragon Con.
Nice.
And he hit on my girlfriend, who was also 16. And Bob Burton was...
Successfully?
Already like 80 years old at that point. So, but I do love his stuff, and he should put out more comics.
Yeah.
Yep.
If he's listening.
Yeah. If you're listening. All right. So we've got, Bob Burton or Wang Gretzky. and then we've got another question. This is from Cassandra Wild Lofgren. If also that's your real name, unless you're Bob Burton as well. says, I don't read comics except for The Walking Dead, but I love nerdy stuff. It doesn't say stuff, but that's what I'm going to say.
Gotcha.
Question, why don't more girls read comic books? Girls are getting into other nerdy realms. What's the missing bridge?
I feel like there's a really easy answer to this.
Girls do read comic books?
Yeah.
Well, I think the manga kind of broke it open, but that's kind of disappearing in a lot of ways, so I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's maybe true of superhero comics, but I don't know that that's, at least for us, I know a lot of stores still deal kind of exclusively in superhero comics.
True.
But for us, I mean, you talked about Walking Dead, that's a big one.
Yeah, true. That's got a lot of people to read comics, period.
Yeah, and... I don't know. Girls just do read comics.
Well, the problem is girls aren't really like there's a lot that are into superhero comics, but I feel like a lot of them are probably turned off by it because it's fairly.
Well, it's basically, I mean, they're it's male power fantasy stuff.
Yeah,
it's the classic I want to be a superhero. Yeah. Like I'm cool.
Yeah. So we actually do get a lot of female comic readers coming in here, but they tend to buy. I don't know. I want to say better comics.
Saga.
No, better comics.
No, sagas bring a lot of people.
They're a little more
in.
Choosy.
I mean, you look at something like SPX, which we've talked about on here before. I'd say half the people that go to that show are girls.
At least.
Yeah.
So it's just like the world.
Like the world.
Yeah. So
aren't there more girls than guys?
Yeah. It's 52%.
So comics are still a little bit behind.
Yeah. We're way behind.
2% behind.
So hopefully that answers everybody's questions. And then... that's it. If you guys have questions, you can send those questions to the question place at podcast@bigplanetcomics.com, or you can call our podcast hotline.
Yeah, or you can email us and say first-time caller, even though you could have called us.
You could have called us.
That'd be exciting.
Bob Burden.
I'm just saying.
If that's your real name. So that phone number is 1703-539-CAST.
I knew that number. I've memorized it, even though I've never called.
Yeah, me too. So you prank called it one time.
I don't know what you're talking about, but Nick does have a sexy voice.
So should we get into some reviews, guys? This mini episode is turning into a maxi.
That's what we do.
Yep, let's do this.
We love comics, they're swell, except when they're written by Scott Lobdell. I prefer important books like Louis Riel. It's time for reviews.
Up first this week on the Big Planet Comics podcast,
woo!
Black Beetle number 0. This is a new comic by Francesco Francavilla, who does a lot of covers, I would say.
He does a cover for every comic that comes out.
And every cover is better than the regular cover.
He will win, just a little spoiler for we're going to do our best of the year. He will win best cover artist. There won't be other people in the category. We will just announce him as the winner. So this is another number 0 issue from Dark Horse, which usually always means that it was collected in Dark Horse Presents. So this was in Dark Horse Presents, I think 11, 12, and 13.
Yeah, they're running 8-page stories in Dark Horse Presents. So these are three pretty much just chapters of an ongoing story put together. And then the number 1 issue of the ongoing The Black Beetle series will start next month.
Yeah, but this is all kind of one story called Night Shift, and it's about a group of Nazis that are trying to steal an ancient artifact. And this superhero, shows up named Black Beetle and fights them.
Yeah, this is very like these are Nazis in the Hellboy vein. They're all into the occult and they have like jetpacks and super weapons and yeah, it's awesome.
I'm glad to see Nazis in this. I mean, they're very underused these days.
They're kind of fading out. There've been too many zombies.
So yeah, Black Beetle's a new character that seems like he would be an old character.
Yeah.
But yeah, I you know, this is pretty basic pulp stuff, but I thought it was actually a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's in the Lobster Johnson vein, but yeah, I think it's just the sense of fun that Francavilla brings to this is astounding. It's like, I don't know, he's got like all the poses yeah. and like the hard-boiled banter and like, you know, explosions and, you know, rat-tats of machine guns are going all over the place and things on fire and crazy occult happenings. And
yeah, it's definitely, he definitely writes to his art style.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
You know, because his art, if you've never seen it before, it's very dark. There's a lot of shades, shadows, and like... he has a really weird color palette. It's not usually normal colors. It's always almost always like overrun with purples or
oranges. I thought about that. Reds. Yeah. Yeah, no. yeah, his style's great, and you usually only get to see it on covers. I mean, he's done a few things for Marvel before. He did like some Captain America and Bucky and Black Panther.
Yep.
Yeah, but no, this is just a lot of fun. Talking about Lobster Johnson, all the bad guys in this look like Lobster Johnson, yep. And Black Beetle looks like Lobster Johnson.
Yeah. Also some Rocketeer on this, obviously. So it's all that kind
yeah,
of
yeah, like
style.
There was a kind of a cool almost twist ending there with a little bit of mystery set up for future.
Almost yep. twist ending.
Very.
A definite twist ending.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I would say even if you're not a fan of stuff like this, maybe this would be the thing to grab and check out and see if you want to read something pulpy because...
it's cool.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun and the art is really, really good.
Two-fisted action.
Two-fisted action. All right, so up next we've got another book with interesting art. This is Cursed Pirate Girl.
Interesting.
We couldn't remember.
You mean the most interesting art ever?
Yeah, I don't know if we've ever actually talked about Cursed Pirate Girl on here before.
So like we have by Jeremy Bastien, and he is like the slowest, greatest artist ever.
Slow for a reason, but Jared, can you tell people what this comic is about?
Well, luckily, Cursed Pirate Girl is exquisitely designed. We're going to rave about his art in a minute, but just the design on this is intricate and, I don't know, say, like, old books, like, with lots of engravings in, you know, in papers and stuff. And there's a nice inscription going around the outside of the front cover, which
we should say this collects the three individual issues of Cursed Pirate Girl that yeah. previously came out.
Yes, but it says, the story of a cursed pirate girl, an orphan left into a world which she did not belong, undertakes a perilous journey. She sets out to find her father, a pirate captain of the Imerta Seas. The legend of those black waters tell of any imaginable monsters and terrible creatures, yet the most dangerous of its denizens are they that sail above. These two, this lost daughter, shall brave, for no obstacle is greater than the promise of finding her rightful place at her father's side.
This is a long engraving.
Exactly what it's about.
What happens. Plus, there's the daughter of a governor. So this is all set like 18th century, kind of like
yeah, yeah.
Age of Piracy.
Pirate time.
Yeah,
yeah.
Pirate time.
In Jamaica or some island. Where are they? Are they actually on a real...
Far 30.
Are they actually on a real place when this starts off?
I'm not sure about that.
Here you go. Port Elizabeth in Jamaica.
There you go.
The year 1728.
Yeah, so it's all sort of told through this young girl's eyes. Antonia, is that her name?
Apolliona.
Apolliona, yeah.
Apolliona.
And they use her to kind of immerse you into this girl's world. And they're like, the cursed pirate girl is telling her stories. And then they kind of adventure together. And it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's pretty simple. The cursed pirate girl seems to have no memory of... That's the real twist, is that she doesn't know who her father is exactly, but she knows that he is a pirate of these cursed, you know, magical seas.
Right.
And she's going to try and find him. And she has dreams in which he appears as a shadowy figure and trains her in sword fighting. And she's...
Awesome stuff.
Utterly awesome. And quickly sets off on adventure and runs into, like... I was trying to describe, like, the art and the storytelling is kind of like a mix of, like, the Brothers Grimm and, like the artist, like, Rackham.
Yeah, yeah. Cross. Well, yeah. Are we like, talking about the art now?
We kind of have to because
okay,
it's, like,
yeah,
the
no,
art
that's fine.
And the storytelling
yeah,
kind of fit this very tale, over-the-top adventure. I can't even...
Yeah,
it's amazing.
The art is definitely the very... Yeah, I mean, the story is actually really well told,
yeah.
and it feels a lot different than most things you read, even the way it's told.
Yes.
It's really interesting. But the art in this is definitely, I think, the thing that's going to interest most people. Yeah, like you said, it's a lot like Arthur Rackham.
Yeah.
Also reminds me a lot of John Tenniel.
Is it Doré who has
Gustave Doré.
Gustave Doré, just like the thin like line etching style and
A lot of it does look like sort of etching stuff. And but there's a lot of hatching. It's all very sort of Victorian.
Yeah.
And it looks great. And if you don't know who some of those people are, like John Tenniel did illustrations for Alice in Wonderland and so think of that. I mean,
Rackham illustrated every fairy tale ever.
Yeah, I think he did Peter Pan illustrations and also versions of Alice in Wonderland as well.
Yeah.
And,
I'm going to go with Tenniel a lot on this because besides just the like adventure and the city's actually very well designed, and he draws a couple of pirate ships that are just astounding in their detail. But a lot of the people and creatures are like this kind of misshapen, I don't know, like kind of like Humpty Dumpty style people.
Yeah,
so very like very Lewis Carroll type, just bizarre looking.
Yeah, and maybe mixed a little bit with like the style of like editorial and political cartoons from the time as well. Yeah,
that's exactly well.
But I mean, if any of that sounds interesting, this book is really
the level of detail in this is just insane on each page. Like you could spend an hour just looking at one page.
Yeah, and he'll do spreads of a city or a scene of crowds and stuff.
He must draw this on a piece of paper the size of a room.
I hope so.
It's insane. Because you can look in the background and there's a perfectly drawn person like way in the background.
Yeah, and then he'll draw like a parrot and you're just like, this is the most beautiful bird I've ever seen. Or like, just awesome. Man.
If you ever get a chance, Jeremy Bastion to see him at shows, he's a really nice guy. And he always has prints that he makes that aren't Chris Pirate Girl things, but like he has like a Little Nemo print that has to
be. Oh, really?
It's like, it's really, really good. Yeah, but Chris Pirate Girl, I can't recommend it enough.
It does end on a cliffhanger, but it's got some extra back stories of Apollyonna's adventures and an awesome fold out poster. This book is gorgeous.
The book is really well put together as
so
well.
Good.
Yeah, it wears its influences on its sleeve proudly, but also it feels wholly original.
Yeah.
And it's really good. All right, so up next we got a book called Country Ass Whoopin'.
what a
to follow right along.
This is put out by 12 Gauge, who are a really strange publisher. So 12 Gauge put out
Loose Ends,
which was great, but never finished.
Yeah. They said issue 4 is coming. I checked.
Okay, that's good. I'm glad it's still coming. But then they put out like that weird like Trace Adkins.
Luke McBain.
They put that out as well. So they definitely seem to have a very like Southern country
ice.
That as well. So that definitely seems to be kind of a theme of their books is like, you know, country ass whoopers. And this book is a lot of short stories with that kind of theme. And it's all it's all the proceeds go to tornado relief.
Yeah, back in 2010 when a bunch of like 60 tornadoes or something just devastated Alabama. This is all raising money for that.
Yeah, yeah. Basically destroyed a town that was pretty close to where I used to live in Alabama. Jeez. And so there are stories by a bunch of different people in here.
And everyone on this did it for free. All the writers and artists and colorists and editors and letters, everybody. So
we'll put a full list up online, but some of the standouts are definitely Jason Aaron, who's from Alabama.
Didn't know that.
Nathan Edmondson, who is Jake Ellis, and Where's Jake Ellis and Dancer and a bunch of other good stuff. And then, you know, just a bunch of other good people. Sean Patrick Flannery, isn't that like the guy that directed Boondock Saints?
No, he's an actor, isn't he?
Oh, maybe. Or he was in Boondock Saints.
Could be.
Yeah. So, were there any stories in here that particularly stood out to you guys?
Well, obviously the Jason Aaron one is always awesome. It's ridiculous
the most
one.
Alabama thing you've ever read. If we have any listeners in Alabama, basically it's people fighting about Auburn Alabama games.
Yep.
Yeah.
But then there's that's another good one that's just about like back in 94 when parts of Savannah flooded and just like people were dealing with looters and stuff afterwards. Then there was a cute Sean Patrick Flannery story, just a cute one about like it's hilarious story. It's like an illustrated prose story about a kid who wants to learn kung fu just to impress the girls in the class and like the ridiculous thing that happens when their teacher actually has to fight someone. There's one later on that I really liked about a kid who's like trying to become a comic book artist. I can't remember. Oh, the Red Revenger. I don't remember who.
Oh yeah, yeah, that was good too. Yeah, yeah. Most of the stuff in here is.
There's one that Julie Godwin who drew. It looked very much like, oh my God, who does Strangers in Paradise? Terry Moore.
Yeah, that's the one. Influence. That's the one written by Chuck Brown. That was actually my favorite story in there. Yeah. I assume it's written by Chuck Brown
before he died.
R.I.P. Yeah, the Go-Go legend Chuck Brown.
Yeah.
That story is great. It's about like basically a kid who has like a crappy office job that he hates, and he just dreams about going back to the farm where he grew up, and then he kind of makes that happen in a way that befits the title Country Ass Whooping.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
But yeah, all in all, I'd say like some of those are standouts, but all the rest were good.
So if you like whoopings and you like comics, this is the comic for you.
Yeah, yep. I feel like the whole thing is solid. And it's
it
cool
says
that
right here, a scattershot anthology. It's true.
I definitely agree with that. Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, it's, you know, if you like whooping ass in the country, then you're probably not listening to this podcast. But
And it's a way to give money to Tornado Relief and get a comic out of it.
Yeah. And everything in this was entertaining, which is the best.
I agree with that. Yeah, I had a fun time reading it. All right, so we just have, like we said, it's not a big week. We just have a couple more things, but this was a big standout for me.
Yeah.
This is a new graphic novel called Iron. The funny thing, we've talked about Archaea before, how they're kind of all over the place.
Right. Yeah.
They seem to be going through like a good period right now. They put out this Cursed Pirate Girl book this week.
Last week they put another Rust out.
Yep. And this week they put out also this thing called Iron, which is or The War After. It's a new graphic novel by S.M. Vidari, who's a creator I don't know. But
me either.
God, this is such a complicated story, but... who wants to try to tell people what this is about?
All right, Iron.
Take it away.
A story. It takes place in a world where there's kind of seems to be a perpetual winter going on.
Yep.
and there's a war going on between different factions in the country, like a civil war. A big civil war just ended, and they're still kind of separated, and there's maybe another war about to start. It's about spies stealing information and people trying to get that information back. But at the core of it, it's about the son and daughter of a spy who, I don't even know how to, I don't want to give too much away, but
yeah.
there's bad people looking for him. People on the other side of the conflict are looking for him because he was considered a traitor.
He's like a spy. He's a part of the resistance who are fighting against this thing called the regime.
Yeah. And, so the son and daughter are in a home and, they're trying to deal with what happened to their father and
that's the thing. There are
four chapters and every chapter there's a radical shift in both direction in what has happened.
Yeah. And those kind of revelations are what makes this book really interesting. Those twists and turns. You know, it's like if we came out here and tried to tell you the plot of like Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy or something like that.
We could do it, but you'd be angry at us.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. All I'll say is that what this really ends up being about is like, you know, no side of a war or any kind of conflict is maybe 100% in the right, and there are bad people and good people a lot of times on either side. I mean,
and just that everyone's pulled in every direction in this sort of conflict where it's not even a, you know, different armies against, it's just like people who know each other who have old problems. And it's
such a well-told story and so depressing.
It is really depressing.
Like almost every chapter ended really sadly.
Yeah, the children, especially in this story, have to go through some pretty tough stuff.
Yeah,
and
everyone does, really.
Yeah, yeah.
The coolest thing about all this is the art.
Oh, man.
Yeah, well, I think the story for me was the coolest thing, but the art is really good.
Well, the art is the thing that kind of makes the story because it uses all these kind of blue and like brown and gray tones.
Yeah. And we should say also it's all anthropomorphic.
Oh, yeah. We didn't mention that. All the people are bunnies and dogs and cats and snakes and
goats,
tigers.
And owls.
And the art is like, I don't even know how to explain it. It's not like perfect. It's not great. But when you're reading it, it's really, really good.
Yeah, it definitely suits the story. And it has has a good atmosphere to it. It's all pen and ink and like watercolors. It's just, you know, it feels the way it should feel. Everybody feels very detached from each other and like, it's interesting. I don't know. The composition of the panels and like the layouts and stuff are really interesting.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Like, there's a lot of like pages where there's just one tiny picture in the bottom corner of a page and it adds to the effect of stuff. But one of the cool things is at the end of each chapter, there's a letter from written by different characters that are in the book.
From back in the war that have all been confiscated.
From
or
before
now
the war, yeah. Or during
censored
the war.
Censored, or, yeah.
Yeah, and all those letters really serve to, like, hit home the tragic thing that has happened in whatever chapter.
Twist the plot.
Or
both.
Yeah, I mean, this is an interesting book. To me... I mean, I know I already said Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy, but I would say that's like a good thing to compare
it to.
Because that's very much about, espionage and like how it affects people's lives and stuff like that, and how like friendships can be formed, but maybe they don't mean as much as you think they do, or maybe they mean more than you ever thought they did. And yeah, no, I mean, this is a good book. It's very sad,
very sad, very moving.
Yeah, but moving. And
yeah, like almost every character in this is pretty fascinating. Like even the ones that you think are bad, it's just like everyone's just really well defined.
I think this will be a late addition, at least to our longer list that we still have to whittle down of graphic novels of the year. We'll see. But yeah, Iron, definitely worth so checking out.
Yeah.
All right, we just have one more book for this week. This is JSA Liberty Files: The Whistling Skull. This is written by B. Clay Moore, who wrote Golden. What was that? What was that damn book called?
JSA Golden Years or something?
No, the Battle Hymn.
Oh, thanks.
Battle Hymn.
I was like, something.
That's the one.
And then
JSA Liberty Files.
And JSA Liberty Files. And Tony Harris, who, of course, drew Starman and Ex Machina. And I believe drew the first also JSA Liberty Files.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, so I didn't read the first one of these either. You guys read it?
There's two of them before.
Yeah, this is the third series. First one's astounding because it's basically
so good.
Superman Red Sun, but like alternate history superheroes in World War II.
Yeah, it's like Batman and the JSA in World War II. Like,
oh, really? That sounds awesome.
It's totally really cool.
And it's drawn by Tony Harris?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, boy. It's so good.
Yeah, it's the best.
Can I just say real quick, why doesn't DC, like, those books are not available?
I was about to say.
Why don't they? I know Marvel does this a lot, even with terrible things that nobody wants to read. They'll be like, hey, there's a new comic coming out with, like, Legion. Let's publish all the stupid comics that had Legion in them before. Yeah. But yeah, I feel like DC really drops the ball on that a lot.
A little bit.
Especially because these are great. They did put out a big book that had both of them in it.
Oh, did
they? That was like
a while ago.
I gotta say like 7-8 years ago.
Yeah, so I don't know. It seems like the kind of thing where they would just drop a new edition, make it match up with the dress of the new series that's coming out. You know, that kind of thing.
Wacky.
Anyway. One of the weird things about this story is that I read somewhere that there was a separate comic called The Whistling Skull that was coming out.
Oh, really?
And it got integrated, that they were doing together, and it got kind of integrated into this story.
What?
Kind of really weird.
That's
and you
weird.
Kind of can feel that a little bit.
Well, it certainly doesn't seem to have much to do with the JSA.
Yeah,
no. I mean, a little bit. Some of them are on the cover.
It's
they're
like,
in the
beginning. It's alternate
the beginning.
History. Yeah, this is just like, if you had these people running around doing weird stuff.
But
yeah.
But besides all that stuff, I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah, like the first series, like I said, was very World War II, and this, like the second series, quickly, even the first one, but the second one definitely shifted into much more like just bizarre, Hellboyish, like weird, pulpy territory. I mean, it was pulpy in the first one, but like very, very away from the superhero universe. And so this one, they're like investigating up in like Transylvania. It's just like completely outside of the typical like big
cities and superhero
stuff.
They're in Switzerland, right?
Yeah. Got me.
Well, because the people there are like Swiss Germans.
Ah, there you go.
Yeah, I mean, they're like, yeah, basically it starts out in like London in 1925 and then quickly jumps to like Japan in 1940.
Yep.
And just kind of setting up these different characters and who they are. And then then it switches to Switzerland where they're kind of investigating these people that have been being kidnapped. There's a lot of stuff going on in this story.
It's like interweaving plots, and it's just all pulp action and like, you know,
the main character is the aforementioned Whistling Skull, who is a guy who looks like a skeleton with a whistle coming out the side of his head.
Somebody came in yesterday and I had just finished reading this and they were like, what's it about? And I was like, there's like this guy that has like a whistle on the side of his head and he looks kind of like a zombie. I can't remember what his name is, but Andy's like the other guy who works at the store. He was like, that's the Whistling Skull.
You're like, oh, where did that come from?
I'm like, oh, wow, that makes sense. Flo Rida, Florida.
Yeah.
But and he kind of joins up with these other two characters who are British spies, I guess. And they're just kind of investigating these series of kidnappings
while driving a crazy like Mad Max armored tank. It's like utterly bizarre.
It's like very Scooby-Doo-ish.
Yeah, like Hellboy pulp level Scooby-Doo insanity.
And then a crazy thing happens at the end that kind of turns it into something else. Yeah. And it's cool. And the art is
awesome.
Really good.
It's Tony Moore at his best.
Tony Harris.
Tony Moore.
What did I say? Tony Moore.
Tony Harris at his best. I mean, B. Clay Harris.
Yeah, B. Clay Moore and Tony Harris, yeah.
Tony Harris is, I mean, if you're going to fault him for anything, it's that he uses a lot of photo reference, but he seems to be really moving away from that recently.
Yeah. Oh, no, you should see what he did to get these people to look like that. Photos. It was ugly.
He used the dwarves from The Hobbit. To get but, yeah, he's getting much more cartoony and I think much more expressive and a lot less posed, and I think that really works for this. And a lot of the page layouts are great. They remind me a lot of J.H. Williams.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
And that's like the biggest compliment you can probably pay to a page layout. So, yeah, that's it for JSA The Whistling Skull. Read I think it. We all liked it.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah, and that's it for this episode of Big Planet Comics Podcast. I had to remember what it was called.
The show.
That's why I remind you.
We're going to have one more like sort of even minier episode, our 69.1 episode that's going to go up next week, because next week's, they call it the skip week, but there are a couple big books coming out. We want to talk about
those. So we'll review all those.
And then after that, we'll probably be back in the second week of January with our best of 2012 podcast.
Yeah.
Yep. So if you're listening to this anytime before that and you live in the area, don't forget we're having our big sale on January 1st.
That's true. Sometimes
20% off everything.
A store.
I remind you.
All right, cool. Well, we'll see you guys next time.